Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Well, cheers.
Cheers. Happy 50th, my friend.
Happy 50th. Here's to at least 50 more.
We're going to be doing this till they stop making musical theater.
My God, can you imagine?
I don't know what I'd do.
And even then, though, we'll still got a huge back catalogue, so...
Do you think we'll ever catch up?
What, to musical? What, as in, like, we've done them all?
Well, as in, like, you know, we joke around about, like, when we're going to reach the, you know...
The scraping, like, of the barrel.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
I've got a list here.
Subways are for sleeping. Seven. Yeah. There's seven more musicals we can do.
At least six. At least six, actually. So this list's about 1,400, but I have a feeling there's many, many more.
So, but call it...
And also...
It takes us 2 years to get through 50, so 25-ish a year.
Yep. But
yeah,
also, we've been
more
consistent.
More years in this,
that's fine. So what age will I be? About 86. Yeah, that's doable. That's totally doable. 86.
Welcome to Germantomics Musical Theater. Where am I?
This time we're going to talk about that old favorite, Dear Evan Hansen. This has been a popular choice for a while now.
I like that your old man impression is also a Southern American.
Yes, exactly. I think that's how everyone sounds, though, when they get to that age.
That old
age.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Are you going to move to Georgia when you retire?
I would love that.
Open a plantation? I don't think you would.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. You can always depend on the can as a stranger's. What's that from? I don't even know. Is that Streetcar?
It's either Streetcar or Glass Menagerie. It's in that, like, bucket of plays I had to read in college bucket.
Yeah. Because I think it is Streetcar. And the only reason I know that, classic Jim and Tomic trope.
Wait, let me guess. You saw it on The Simpsons.
You can always depend on the kindness of strangers to pack up your troubles and keep you from danger. Now here's a little thing you won't regret. A stranger's just a friend you haven't met. You haven't met. Streetcar.
What if our 50th episode, we don't talk about a musical, it's just us babbling to each other?
I know, it's like, sorry guys. We could,
like,
do that.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
So, interestingly enough, we've had a couple of emails recently from people who have been asking how they can support the show and help us out a bit financially. So, we have decided to start up a Patreon?
Question mark?
No, we have. That's a decision. Yeah. Patreon. Downbeat. Now, obviously, like, the zero pressure here is just some people have said that it's something they want to do. The best satisfaction and the best gift you can give us is to listen to
Please.
The podcast.
Yes.
And you're doing a really good job of that so far. So
A plus so
don't,
far.
Don't change that. Yep. But if it is something you're interested in, then if you hop on over to patreon.com/JimAndTomic, you'll find us over there. And as an extra special 50th treat, hey, if you want to stick around at the end of this podcast, you'll maybe hear something brand spanking new.
We're trying something new. We're being daring.
Question mark?
Dun, dun, dun.
We are.
You'll have to find out. You got to listen to us babble about the musical for several hours before that happens.
Yes, indeed.
Or I guess it's just on your phone. You could skip ahead right now. But don't do that.
Yeah,
that's no fun.
Exactly. We know you won't. We know you love the babbling.
And here's our secret. No.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. But anyway, shut up, Tommy. On with the show.
On with the show.
Will somebody get us another drink?
A very special welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theater Happy Hour, your weekly podcast with box steps and birthday cake vodka.
Woo!
Why is
the
it birthday?
Vodka
why is it
flying.
Birthday cake vodka? Jimmy.
Because it's our birthday. Or what did you say? Anniversary?
Anniversary? Birthday?
Anniversary? Yeah, it is our 50th happy hour. I can't believe that.
That's amazing. We've talked so much.
By the way, yeah, we've talked for a lot of hours. Yeah. And people have listened to that.
And thank you, everyone, for keeping us in your ear holes.
This birthday cake vodka shot is for you.
Good job.
Well done. It wasn't birthday cake vodka. I could not do it without a vodka shot.
We wouldn't make it through the podcast.
I would barf.
Speaking of, Jimmy, what are you drinking today?
Well, today, Thomas, I am drinking milk straight from the udder of a cow.
Ooh.
Mm. Oh, there's a little bit of hair in there. That's a bit disgusting, isn't it? A weird sort of blood-like irony aftertaste.
This is a strange little improvisational scene you're doing there. So are you trying this out for The Fringe? Is this going to be your one-man show?
Yeah, exactly. Drinking.
I'd go see it, that's for sure.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Always supportive. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking wine that is close to the family.
Very good. Very good. Did you just search for any, like, liquid sort of
reference? No, I've been preparing that joke for 50 episodes, Jimmy.
Well, I'm proud of you.
The pinnacle of my comedy. It's all downhill from here.
It's all downhill from here. Oh, God. Oh. No, I'm joking. Well, what could we possibly be talking about after that cryptic nonsense?
What could it be? Our listeners know now is the point where you read the quiz question.
They do. They do indeed. And a few people got this one. So people have been watching Side by Side with Simpson Blackwell. So the Tony Award winning leading actress in this show, who met. I'm going to put that in inverted commas.
Yeah.
Seen and stopped in her tracks and kind of looked at each other desperately. Well, she auditioned for the show with a ballad, Tommy.
Yes,
The ballad was, "What Did I Have That I Don't Have?" from On a Clear Day You Can See Forever. And when asked if she had an up-tempo, she said, "No, but I can sing this one 5 times faster." And so she did, and got the part. What show?
Jimmy, I'm so excited. It's Into the Woods.
Once upon a time, in a far-off kingdom,
more than anything,
lived a fair maiden, a sad young lad,
I wish,
and a childless baker.
More than life,
I wish,
with his
more
wife.
More than anything,
more than the moon,
I wish.
The king is giving a festival.
More than life,
I wish.
I wish to go to the festival.
More than riches,
I
wish my cow would give us some milk.
More than anything,
I wish we had a child.
Please, pal.
Please, pal. I wish to go to the
I
festival.
I wish you'd give us a list
I
for
even child.
I wish.
Festival?
The poor girl's mother had died.
Here we are, Tommy. We're in the woods at last.
I think if you add it up already and we're, you know, adding into that bucket the, like, pure amount of time I've spent talking on the internet about this show.
Oh my gosh.
It's the top of the bar graph.
This was your first video?
This was my very first. This was the idea that started Musical Theater MASH.
Oh my
was
gosh.
Minute-ish into the woods. And the crazy thing about that was, usually with the minute-ishes after that, I had to like rewatch them and like think through them. The Into the Woods one, I like wrote in 6 minutes. Like,
it was there.
Yeah, just boom, done. And you know, I've rewatched it a couple times, and a lot of my old videos don't hold up, but that one I'm still pretty proud of.
That's good. As you should be. I'm proud of my first one.
I
wrote it in my very first evening.
Put it in the show notes.
Absolutely.
It'll be a birthday-versary gift.
Oh, how cute. Just a really self-indulgent gift. By the way, so obviously the actress we were talking about previously just there was naturally Tony-winning Joanna Gleason.
Which, so, Jimmy and I, when we met in real life for the first time, going to see, pour one out, Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812.
I will pour it all over this mic.
After our amazingly crazy night in New York and seeing each other and going through and watching this beautiful show that we knew so many things about, we leave the theater and we're walking back to our Airbnb, and Jimmy, like, tugs on my sleeve And I'm like, what's happening? And he has this like look on his face and he's looking forward. And in front of us is this tall, dark figure wearing, in my mind, the most beautiful cloak in the world.
It was as if she's just like put on Pierre's cloak and then walked out into the New York street.
And she was just floating there. And he was, and Jimmy was like, do you know who that is? And I like couldn't quite see. And he was trying not to intrude. And he was like, that's Joanna Gleason.
Yeah, it was just like that, you know, that moment where you're like, it just still, I couldn't, you couldn't move.
Yeah.
And we'd also seen Leslie Margarita and Lindsay Mendez that night.
Because everyone was out seeing the show.
Everyone was out seeing the show. I couldn't believe it. I was just like, New York, well done.
Yeah, crazy.
You do it again, kids. We didn't say anything.
Of course,
I don't think you're allowed.
We did the thing where you do nothing when you see a famous person.
You just freeze.
It's like seeing a bear. I don't know if that's the appropriate reaction to seeing a bear, but it feels like it is.
Yeah, well, no, apparently bears, you make noise. I think bears big in noise, that's what you want.
You know the number one rule with Joanna Gleason is if you don't bother her, she won't bother you.
Exactly. You will be safe. So, Into the Woods, as if it needs a preface. Anyway, music and lyrics by that old chestnut, Mr. Stephen Sondheim, I think is how you pronounce it. And the book by Mr. James Lapine.
Mm-hmm. Premiered in 1987 on Broadway with some out-of-town tryouts before that. Had 10 Tony nominations and only won 3. Do you know why it only won 3, Jimmy? Because of Phantom like of the Opera.
Yes. I know. Silly Phantom. The 80s were weird, though, Tommy. People just weren't. They didn't have their heads.
No, the 80s were fine. Andrew Lloyd Webber was weird. Anyway, that's another podcast.
Never mind. Anyway. the moments. Anyway, yes. So it then had an extremely long-lived life where it went on a really good tour, like a really successful tour around the States. It opened up in the West End in 1990. It was then revived in the West End. Interesting, I always find that it was revived first in the West End. I feel like that never happens. And it wasn't very good. It was revived with Vanessa Williams in 2002.
In 2002, and then had a recent revival in 2010 in the West End. And is that the outdoor one?
That is the Regent's Park open air production, which then I think crossed across the pond.
And they did a Central Park production, which I guess is unclear whether that counts as a Broadway revival or not, but it's still fantastic.
I actually don't know if Regent's Park is counted as a West End theater.
Yeah, that's a good question. I bet neither of them are, because you don't hear of the Central Park being nominated for Tonys, which is usually the Broadway delineator.
No, it does get nominated for Olivier's, but Olivier's probably different.
Yeah.
Who knows? Some of them
anyway, will. And then, of course, the 2014 Disney film adaptation.
We were treated to a film of Into the Woods.
Which is crazy. And I babble about it for like 40 hours in another YouTube video.
Yes, you do. as so many people do, there's lots of opinions about that film.
Yeah.
But right, what on earth is Into the Woods? Does anyone know?
Into the Woods, Act 1 is all of your favorite fairy tales and how they all took place at the same time. And Act 2 is after Happily Ever After, where everything goes wrong. That's how I describe Into the Woods to people. I've got it down to like 2 sentences.
That's good. That's very, very good. That's their like show run by him. Yeah, exactly. And there's some new stories in there of the baker and his wife who were just created for the show. And yeah, it's about getting her happily ever after and then kind of facing the consequences as to how you got there.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's also, I would say, the base underlying concept of Into the Woods that everyone seems to blow right past because it's so simple is that in your life, you must go into the woods. You must do something dangerous or scary or that you don't want to do to get the thing that you want. And I would say the moral of it is, even if you do that and get the thing that you want, no one's story ends in book covers. And so life continues with journeys into the woods. And sometimes that ends well, and sometimes that ends poorly, and sometimes it's unfair which way it ends.
Yeah, and you will always go back into the woods forever and ever and ever. Yeah, okay. This is going to be a long podcast, by the way, just to let you know. I think we say that, we don't even muster 50 minutes.
Yeah, watch, it'll be like 20 minutes. Like, oh, yeah, and well, that's it. Into the woods. Yeah. See you next week.
Because, like, I weirdly feel with this podcast, even though it's Into the Woods and I've co-directed it and, you know, been listening to it for centuries, I feel weirdly unprepared because I'm I just don't know what the hell. Do you know what I mean?
I feel a lot of low-level pressure.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I hate that. Yeah. I hate pressure. I hate musical theater pressure. Yeah. That's something that definitely exists. See, when this is, like, your biz, people expect things.
Yeah. I'm
not, you know...
And, like, but, we're still just two blokes on the internet, but...
Oh, bloke. Great use of bloke.
Thank you. I'm trying to pick up... You use so much American vernacular. I'm trying to pick up a little more. I figure 50 I'm episodes
really
in.
Yeah, I really
I'll get one more
that.
In the next 50 episodes.
Thank you.
Maybe I'll start talking about something that's twee. Anyway, let's get into it.
Left in the things you know, little more than a glance is enough to show you just how small you are. When you're way up high and you're on your own in a world like none that you've ever known, where the sky is lead and the earth is stone, you're free to do whatever pleases you, exploring things you'd never dare, cause you don't care when suddenly there's a big, tall, terrible giant at the door. A big, tall, terrible lady giant sweeping the floor. And she gives you food and she gives you rest. And she draws you close to her giant breast. And you know things now that you never knew before. Not till the sky. Only just when you've made a friend and all and you know she's... Okay, so on our journey through the woods, Let's get right into the meat of it, and talk about, I guess, you know, every time we do a Sondheim, I feel like I always say this, but is it some of his best writing? Probably.
I mean, I think, you know, I don't pick favorites. Into the Woods is very high up there on my Sondheim list.
Yeah. And I do you not feel like it's just a bit of a staple?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're like, oh yeah, woods. It's the one that would be like, oh well, god, yeah, of course, woods.
It's so solid. And I do think one of the big reasons it is, and we're musical theater people, but we're not terribly music people, I would say. Not that we don't know music, not that we don't do music, but we'd often have other things to talk about. But especially with Into the Woods, one of the things to look at, especially if you love it, are Sondheim's use of theme throughout. And I do think I'd say that Into the Woods is Sondheim's best use of character and story theme and motif in his corpus.
I would 100% agree. Yeah, but I think as well, just because it's such a ensemble cast, there's so many opportunities to use leitmotif and to dot it around. I've already heard three people in my head tell me that that isn't the case and that it's not his best. But I would agree with you. Because I can pick them out very easily.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean, if it's not his best, it's certainly his most accessible.
Exactly.
And so, like, you can go through, you know, there are easy ones like the cow theme.
Bum, yes.
Bottom, bump, bottom, bump, bottom. Which happens certainly during the milking scene, but also happens when Jack's mother is singing about selling the cow. It happens.
The prince
themes. And then, of course, I think the one, if you're going to write your mini thesis about this, you got to follow the bean theme throughout this show.
The bean theme. Yeah. Yes. Can you give us a rendition of the bean theme?
You know the bean theme from when it is most exposed when the baker gives Jack 5 beans, saving one for himself. And it goes bump, 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 bump. Or during my high school production, where the second percussionist was maybe not the most musically inclined, it went bump, 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 bump. And I'm Jack staring at the baker, both trying not to laugh because I'm selling my... Oh, God, it was a travesty. But
no. That's so upsetting. They weren't magic beans, those ones.
No, those were the dud beans. But so you
imagine if they just then followed that theme throughout the rest of the show instead of like dee dee doo doo doo. It was just like dee dee doo doo doo.
I think that would be fun, funny. Like improv musical theme. Whatever the xylophonist decides right there. That's it.
It makes sense. But yeah, it's
you hear it everywhere. Everywhere.
You really do. You really, really do. Almost anything to do with the witch.
Mm-hmm.
It's in there somewhere.
Yeah.
What I kind of put it to, right, or like make it akin to, is the ring in The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that's a good... Because it is... The beans are the MacGuffin in this show, right? We start with the cow's white, the milk, the cape is red, the blood, the hair is yellow, the corn, the slippers, pure as gold. But they're done by act one. But exactly. The beans spur... They, you know, the put linger. The witch in her place, which is what starts the story.
Like, yes.
The beans are important.
Yeah, they exist before the action of the play, during the action of the play, and hey, we know that they will exist after the action of the play.
Yeah.
And Into the Woods too, they'll find a bean and everything will go wrong. Do you know
and
what I
like,
mean?
You know, we were joking earlier about how much we've listened to this show. I've been listening to it in the car a bunch just to prep for this. And there are still times where I'm like, oh, there's the bean theme. I didn't notice that one. Like, the one you just did, the terror theme, the bean. That's really obvious. Never struck me. Things like the beginning of I Guess This Is Goodbye, Old Friend. Bum, 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 ba, da, da. And then, fantastically, All of Your Fault is the bean theme.
Yeah.
In different inversions and different, you know, rearrangements. Which is, of course, the perfect place for the bean theme to come to a head. Because it's all about the beans.
It's literally like the bean number.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like if they made a good musical of Lord of the Rings, they would have like a ring. You know, it'd be like that. Yeah. It'd be a similar kind of thing. And it is. I love though that it is just infused because you never forget about the beans, and you're never supposed to forget about the beans because they're so integral.
Yeah,
like what a strange thing that they're so integral to this whole show.
Yeah.
If the beans weren't involved, nothing in this show would happen.
Yeah. Well, and it's such a dense and, you know, it's an ensemble show. Everyone has an important part and it's all about the interplay. And so nothing is extra, and not in the millennial sense of extra, but in the actual sense of extra. But they try and trick you, like in the beginning where it's like, you know, I found these beans. Oh, we'll take them with us. You know, 5 beans in exchange for my cow. You'll be lucky enough to exchange her for a sack of beans. Like, seems like silly throwaway stuff. And then when Cinderella gets the bean and is like, oh, this is silly. Blink! Like, and you, if you've never seen the show, you think nothing of it until it becomes a problem.
Exactly. And it is, it's one of those moments as well, you like, you think back and you're like, oh my god, yes, she did throw away the bean. That caused everything.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, really cool.
To me, that's one of the exciting things about this show. And it happens with the beans and happens with the story. And I think, you know, with a show like this, save for the baker and his wife, you know all of the stories beforehand. And they take advantage of this all the time. Like, even in the, you know, the massively multiplayer prologue, the narrator is, you know, says, but the witch refused to tell him any more of his sister, not even that her name was Rapunzel. And immediately you've built Rapunzel. Oh, it's Rapunzel. Of course it's Rapunzel.
Exactly,
I've seen all these fairy tale characters. We're going to meet Rapunzel later. She's going to be up in a tower with hair. Like, I got it. And that's the witch. Yeah. It's Rapunzel's witch. And like... Yeah. They play on these jokes all the way through.
Exactly. And as well, I think that was one of the interesting things that Sondheim kind of had to use dramaturgically.
Mm-hmm.
So he talks about this quite a lot in finishing the... Oh no, Look I Made Her.
Look I Made Her, the pink one.
Yeah, see, I don't have the colors, Tommy. Remember, I just have to rely on the title.
That's all right. I'll give you. I'll send you little stickers. You can put them on the front.
Thank you. Just a pink and a blue. But he talks about this quite a lot, where a lot of the changes from San Diego to Broadway, or even just from writing to San Diego, mm-hmm. Where him being like, I'm just telling the story. Do you know what I mean? People know this story. And he briefly talks about this. And actually, there's a really interesting book called Into the Woods, mm-hmm. Which is a book about stories.
Oh, okay.
And it's actually for people who write screenplays.
Okay.
I read it because
for writing mistake?
Stage plays.
Oh, okay.
I was like, oh, the book, the novel version, the novelization. It's probably up there somewhere. Doesn't matter. So I read it for that. But basically, yeah, it's just about kind of storytelling, where that comes from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many people talk about, oh, this is how you write a story. There's these 7 points that you need to hit, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And it kind of throws that all out the window and it looks to the root of the thing,
mm-hmm.
Which Sondi kind of talks about the fact that, you know, in some ways, these stories are like epigenetic.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It's not just an American thing. It's not just a British thing. They have the same stories in ancient China. They have the same stories in Africa. Like, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
These ideas are everywhere. So he really doesn't need to spend time telling these stories to an audience because you get it.
Yeah. It's so much a commentary on the idea of telling these stories, you know, the fact that at the end of every day, every character comes out and has, here is my moral for the day, and here is my moral for the day, and like that is a whole, we're saying a lot about the idea of telling the story, and then you intertwine that with the Baker and Baker's Wife through line of, you know, children and careful the things you say, children will listen, and storytelling as a diegetic moral giving kind of form.
Yep.
It blends together in a really fascinating and like harmonious way.
Yeah. And like as well, what the fact that we know these things, mm-hmm. it means that we can actually get to the root of the thing and think about, why are these characters doing things? You know, what are the choices that they're making? You're not just thinking about, oh, you know, Jack went up the beanstalk, oh, and then he ran away, stole some things and climbed down and chopped. You're thinking about, why did he do that? What did he get from that?
Yeah.
Why did Cinderella keep running away? And actually, again, really, really interesting. I didn't know this. I've never read, like, a translation of the Grimm's fairy tales.
The Cinderella. Jokers. Yeah.
Yeah. And so apparently, it's just a Disney thing that the whole kind of midnightness happens. And it's like the stroke of midnight turns into a pumpkin or whatever. In the original Grimm's Brothers, she actually just can't decide whether she wants to live at home still and or whether she wants to elevate herself to that stage. So I'm like, that's the story I want to read.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to find that human decision, not this fantasy thing.
Yeah.
And so that's what they've chosen to tell.
Yeah.
And
that's what it's so interesting, the stuff they don't actually specify in the musical Into the Woods, because it's not, Cinderella doesn't need to be home by midnight. We have this big, like, you know, there's so many midnights and we talk about midnights and we use the word midnight to actually mean day and like how many days it takes, but she just happens to be running. But because we have these established tropes and established fairy tale stories, and we're like, oh yeah, she's running because, you know,
because midnight.
Yeah. Just, you gotta,
gotta, she gotta turn into a pumpkin
and home before though, dark. Like, yeah,
exactly. She gets given a dress. Do you know what I mean?
It's exactly.
She's not turned into a princess magically.
Yeah.
I just find that really, really interesting. I mean, it's one of those, we could do a whole podcast on, you know, this line or this musical theme. Well, we could be here for forever.
Just the simplicity of the cow is white as milk, the cape is red as blood, the hair is yellow as corn, the slipper is pure as gold. Number one, that sounds straight out of a fairy tale. It's not. James Lapine and Stephen Sondheim wrote it. But two, the first time you hear it, and then the second and the third and the fifth time you hear it right then, so you remember it as an audience member, they do a really good job of being like, hey, audience, this will be important. But you're like, cape is red as blood, probably Little Red Riding Hood. Ah, cow is white as milk, probably Jack. Slipper is pure as gold. Probably Cinderella. Exactly. Hair is yellow as corn. Like, you put it together long before the baker and his wife figure out. So we're in a Columbo mystery, not a Murder, She Wrote mystery.
Yes, exactly. The old mystery trope. Yeah. No, completely. And I think that's really nice because in Act 1, that's what Act 1 is all about. It's about being, you know, you don't need to be led anymore. You've got it. You're in control. Mm-hmm. Things are going well. Things are happy.
Yeah.
But then everything changes in Act 2 and you don't actually know what's happening and the woods have changed.
Yeah.
And it's very dark. And that's such a nice way to kind of play with the audience because you finish Act 1 and Into the Woods and you're like, great, hang on, I've got another hour and a half. Okay, that's interesting. You've got no idea what can happen next.
Yeah.
But I find it really cool that I think everyone is obsessed with that after ever after, like what happens, next.
Mm-hmm.
And we always love to fantasize and think like, well, you know, did they get on okay?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone, us as humans, we would never be at peace with happily ever after.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, well, we always think what happens next.
Jimmy, I think you should hold on to that thought because I have lots of thoughts about that.
About what? About after ever after?
About after ever after.
Excellent. Have you seen the John Cozart videos?
No.
Okay. Great. I was perfect. I had everything but beauty. I had power. And a dog like a flower in a tower. Then I went into the woods to get my wish, and now I'm ordinary. Cause I'm a fella, I'm a fella, I'm a happy now. I'm happy as a spell and never back. Happy you without power.
Act one ends with Ever After.
Yes.
My whole life is about how do you improve musicals. And Into the Woods is absolutely one of my favorite musicals.
Mm-hmm.
It is not without problems.
Mm-hmm.
I think...
A hushed silence went across the world on that day.
I know. And I think you'll agree. I think one of the big difficulties in either staging Into the Woods or in the construction of Into the Woods is it's two-act structure and ending Act 1 with Ever After. Basically mm-hmm. a song called The End that mm-hmm. everyone assumes to be the end. And, you know, it's a joke I make way back in that first video. Act 1 ends and half of the audience leaves because they think the show is over. And it mm-hmm. might as well be. And I do think this is a structure problem.
Okay.
I think there's... You know, this should have been fixed out of town.
Right? So, well, okay. Hit me with your remedy.
Well, so, as it stands right now, there are two and only two things that let you know that Act 2 is going to happen. Outside uh-huh. of the sign in the lobby that says intermission is 15 minutes and Act 2 is an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Which I think should not be what gets the audience to come back. The two things that tell you is... Into the woods and out of the woods, to be continued, and happily ever after, which no one ever hears because it's covered by this big orchestral crescendo and mm-hmm. it's still in time. We don't like take a fermata or a railroad tracks there. And somewhere in there in the stage directions, we're supposed to see the next beanstalk rise. And I think we're relying a lot on a background piece of stagecraft right there to let the audience know that Act 2 is going to happen. What audience member is going to be sitting there and thinking, huh, that thing. I wonder if that means there's more to this story. You know, I think you're asking a lot for your audience member right there. You seem disagreeable about this.
I do. I think I do, because I think that is actually the whole point. I don't think it's I think from the outset they were like, this is a two-act show.
Yeah.
Act one is this and act two is this. Mm-hmm. And they are separate, well, not separate things, but they are two very distinct things.
Yeah.
And I think that is the full intention. And I can't see any other way of doing it. I can't see you kind of starting act two and at the end of act one, or, you know, vice versa. I think it would feel weird, and it would make the show seem a bit jilted.
Yeah.
Is that because what I think is really, really cool about it is, and this is something actually, so I, full disclosure, I co-directed this with my pal Julian, who's a big fan of the show. Aww. Hey, Julian.
Hi, Julian.
Shout out to you. This is one of the things that we really, really toyed with is, how do you set this up? How do you set up that there's going to be a change? Do you know what I mean? We're doing I think it's a kind of classic Sondheim thing of, it's act two, get ready for something a bit different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Night music, we go into a whole different setting.
Yeah.
Sunday in the Park with George, we jump forward however God knows how many years.
Yeah, poor comparison, but yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. And then this, it's like, you know, you're getting a whole different show.
Yeah.
So, you know, we did the whole, you know, the beanstalk grew at the back. It was essentially, everyone looked at it. It was as if say, look, no, please not. And we played around with the narrator kind of not expecting the end to happen at this point. Because his story ends. And then there's more happening. Do you know what I mean? It's like you get to the end of your book and you see the start of a next sentence, but it doesn't go anywhere. It's like that kind of idea. You're like, hang on, is there a part two that I can't, you know what I mean?
Right.
So he spends the first half till he dies basically looking for
the next part of the book. And it's like a bit of a surprise for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's how we did it.
I think that's successful. I think there are, because I don't think it would be like, and happily ever after, and then you go into like, once upon a time later, and do that beginning, and then have an action. I think that doesn't fix it, and that totally messes with the gist of the show. I think it's like, in my mind, it's an easy fix, and I wish it was in the score. Into the woods and out of the woods, da 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 da, and happily ever, boom, beanstalk grows. Narrator goes, to be continued. And happily ever after, like, do the thing you did. Everyone point at the beanstalk. Like, everyone look at the beanstalk. Have the narrator freaking ride the beanstalk up. Like,
what a fantastic image.
Like,
Yeah, I guess, but isn't that just then down to the direction? Because I'm gonna look and see if it's a pause. I've got my score right here.
Yeah,
And I'm gonna look and see if it's a pause, because I'm sure it is. Because we did.
Yeah,
we paused it. We nailed it.
I don't think it's as written. I think it's a good directorial choice, and I think it still falls into that gray area of as the authors intended. I think the original Broadway doesn't do it well.
I know what you mean.
It's like too behind and too. It's easy to miss. And you need people to come back. Act two of the show is important.
Yeah. I mean, I do wonder. I'd be interested to know if there was any statistics. Classic. Well, there's no pause here. I don't have the full orchestral
score. I'm telling you, it's not written in. And that is an oversight. That should be fixed. You know? Put it in the score. Make it official. Make it the word of God.
But then the stage direction. The stage direction is a giant beanstalk emerges from the ground and stretches to the heavens. The characters are oblivious to its presence.
See, so, and oblivious to its presence, we're not allowed to look at it either.
Exactly. You know? James Lapine doesn't want you looking at that. Yeah. I know. No, I do know what you mean. But no, I'd be interested to know about like the statistics of the people who left.
If anyone actually leaves at intermission, or is this
because you'd be
a joke
stupid. Because you'd be like, "Where's right. Bernadette's song? I'm sure she was supposed to sing a big song in Act Two." Yeah.
But I think there are other things, and I don't know how to play these up, but like the things that do come back: the witch losing her powers, the mysterious man dying / disappearing, the baker's wife being pregnant. Like, those are the things you can point at with maybe larger blinking arrows to be like, "Hey, audience, don't you want to know how this pans out?" And like, those are things in Ever After, like especially the witches and the stepmothers verse, like, you know, we were unhappy and we don't get to be happy, and we're unhappy now, unhappy hence unhappy ever after.
Yes.
Like, if you phrase those a little bit about, like, you know, how does our story end? What happens next? Like, one or two word flips there can still lead you into the next thing and tease that kind of ever after.
So that's it. You don't want it to be as full stoppy. You want it to be more question marky.
Just,
so maybe actually go back and kind of dabble a bit in it.
Just
after.
Give me one or two. You know, Cinderella throwing her bean over her shoulder level. Like a couple things here and there. But yeah, less full stoppy.
But then what would Into the Woods Jr. do?
Oh, God. We could burn it. No, it's a wonderful thing Stephen Sondheim has done. And we should let children do these. And when we talk about Our Little World, we can talk about that too.
Exactly.
Well, maybe let's talk about the optional bits of this show.
The optional bits. So, right, this is something, and I'm going to go back to my production of it. I had like a fight with Julian. Julian's one of my best friends, so I'll happily talk about this on the air. Eat Hollywood Stories, whatever it's called. But yeah, we had proper fights about this because he loved the alternate lyrics, and I was like, sacrilege.
So are we talking the end of Steps of the Palace?
We're talking everything, but for the moment we'll talk about witchy stuff later.
Okay,
because I've maybe have come round.
Okay,
but so the at the end of On the Steps of the Palace,
in the land of the giant, in the belly of the
belly of the wolf.
Yeah,
On the Steps of the Palace, a great belty note then for your cinders. But yeah, it's the basically they all come in together and you realize they've all learned the same. Here you go.
Yeah.
Here's a metaphor, and it sounds great. It sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Even though I think it does sound stilted because it's like and song stops in the land of the and it's a bit like okay, cool. But I also kind of get why, because it's kind of playing to maybe an audience who might not have picked up on the fact that there's this recurring
It's like,
theme.
This is how I've experienced my change based on the bit of the story that you know already.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's a bit force-feedy. I think it's a bit like, here we all are together. But also, it then isolates Baker's wife, who also has her learning, and also kind of, I don't know, it isolates those three characters.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's not just them.
Yeah. Well, that's the big, this is the wonderful thing of this show, Jimmy. And maybe there's a better way to do it. But I think every character has their important character change moment in this show. Mm-hmm. Every single character. We see four of them in song. I don't think we see the witch's character transformation decision in song because she gives up, right? I don't think we quite see the Baker's character transformation in song. We see what leads up to it. We have no more in Act Two, but I think he's still wrestling with it. And like just at the very end of it, it's like father, like son, no more giants. Like that's it. But he doesn't have a whole song about it. And he's the last one to do it too, which I think is important. But then we see the main three, Cinderella, Little Red, and Jack in Act One. And then we see the baker's wife have her I've Changed song in Act Two. And she's the only one to have one in Act Two, by my logic. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something interesting about that.
Okay.
I don't know if In the Belly of a Wolf is the way to do that.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's, I feel like that then, it kind of, it puts a full stop on that, those stories, yeah. If that makes sense.
That's true.
And you don't really open yourself up to the fact that there's more people that are going to go on journeys. Because right. I think it's a completely dramaturgical choice, the order of who learns when.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think it completely is. So, you know, maybe save it for the end of No More.
Right.
then everyone can reprieve. Yeah, the dead wife comes back.
It's the sort
great.
Of thing where I wish there was one more, like, the we went through a change music theme motif.
Yes.
Ends each of these and becomes a little more subtle, becomes less uh-huh. baseball bat over the head. But we can put it at the end of those three, at the end of, you know, What Was That? And at the end of No mm-hmm. More.
And another thing as well, that I think it makes No One Is Alone quite odd, because yeah. you've linked Jack, Red, and Cinders together
yeah.
as almost children, do you know what yes. I mean? As almost like, these are the kids,
yeah.
And the baker and his wife and the witch are the parents.
Yeah.
Whereas in No One Is Alone, that then kind of gets blurred.
Because Cinderella is a parent.
Yeah, she's a parental figure there.
Yeah.
And she's using her slight age on Little Red to mm-hmm.
to be motherly,
to have that conversation. Yeah. 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 Whereas they've already been linked as this kind of like teenage discussion.
Yeah.
So I just think it creates some issues that mm-hmm. it sounds great.
Yeah, it does sound
great. And it's very stirring, and you're yeah. like, ooh, cool.
I do.
The themes.
There's a lot of things about the 2002 Broadway revival I don't enjoy. That's mm-hmm. one of the things I do enjoy, but uh-huh. I have issues with. You know what I mean?
Yes. I know, exactly. Because it's like, love it, hate it, but love it. Okay, right. Go on. Do you know what I mean? It's that yeah. kind of thing.
And there is something about it. The 2002 revival absolutely did, like, well, we need to do everything different. Let's make sure it's different. And I think this was part of that
yeah.
spurring.
Yeah. yeah, for sure. But that's fine. Yeah. That's okay. I'm okay with it. Now, there's a couple of other things that I'm reading here.
Uh-huh.
And I just want you to tell me about your I Wish bum.
What do you think about the last I Wish in this show?
I find it really difficult. I find it very difficult.
Yeah.
Because one of the things I really love is, like, audience psychology.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you put a button at the end and everyone just is just an instant, like, oh,
right, yeah, that's cool. important
before you even realize. Yeah. But with Woods, they do a stilted button,
yeah,
and it will affect the reaction your audience has. And I don't doubt for a fact that this has happened since San Diego to yeah. you know yeah. Rochester High School's production that's happening right. next week or something. Like, it's like, oh, oh, ha, ha, yeah. ha, 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 and it's like
right,
a polite applause.
Into the woods and out of the woods, da, 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 and home before dark. I wish, blimp, like, you've got, like, three yep. buttons there.
Yep.
Which is hard.
It is, again, it's like Lord of the Rings. There's, right. like, 12 different endings.
Well, and so then, the follow-up question is, what is and why do that last I wish?
Can you know? We just repeat what you just said? What is and what do that last I wish?
What is what you just said and why do that last I wish?
Okay. I mean, because it's cute.
Mm-hmm. It is a joke.
It's a joke. It is a gag. Yep. No, completely. And also, lest you forget, this is a farce. This is a farcical tale.
Yeah.
It's never meant to be a serious drama.
Yeah, and it's, like it's we tiptoe funny. Into it in Act Two, but it is mostly farcical. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So ending it on a fun note is like ha 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 ha, great. And I guess it hits into all those themes of like your story never ends, but you'll always want something more. And I get that, but I think at that stage in the show,
yeah,
your audience. You're not thinking at yeah. that point. You're not like, I'm ready for more. Give me some more message. Give me more.
Do you think you fix it the same way I quote unquote fix Act One? Like, into the woods and out of the woods, da 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 da, and home before, and like Cinderella has been contemplating, and she tries to get out her like I wuh, and someone covers her mouth, and then they go and home before dark. Or something
and
else.
And, like,
there.
Have a, just a proper button.
A proper button. Yeah. And, like, have someone stop her from saying, I wish.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess. I don't know. I just feel like it's now just such an integral part of Into the Woods. So it's almost because it's got, like, its own cult status. There, right. Which is, yeah. So people now are ready for it.
They're ready for
They're
it.
Absolutely ready.
And
but
there is something story-wise about, you know, it's Ever Ever After again, part two. It's like, you always have to go into the woods. There will be an act three to this musical. There will be an act four
to this
musical.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder how many people hug about waiting for the next 15-minute interval to go in for act three. Okay, yeah, so what's happening now?
Right, exactly. Who else is going to die?
Exactly.
Who does the baker's son grow up into? Like,
yeah. Sometimes I actually enjoy cleaning. Yeah. Favorite line. Right. Oh, what a line.
I want a friend and a pet.
So good.
Yeah, but I do. The ending of both of these acts boggle me.
Yeah, but the ending of any show is tough.
That's
it's
true.
It's always so tough.
Yeah,
even for the greatest people of all time. And oh my god, how patronizing does that sound? It's just hard. I get it. It's so tough. No, the thing is like. There's nothing wrong with it. It's that we're pulling teeth.
Yeah, exactly.
You're pulling teeth to try and find things that are wrong with Into the Woods.
And yeah, exactly. It's such a great show that these things, you know, shine a little bit because we've listened to it so many times.
Exactly. And the thing is what one thing that you have to give them plaudits for, yes, this is a farce, but it doesn't end in that, like, everything happens in the last 3 minutes, let's go crazy. Right.
Yeah, it's like...
It ends beautifully.
Yeah.
It ends with a moral.
Oh, man. Be father and mother, you'll know what to do alone. And, like, the once upon a time in a far-off kingdom, like, still get me a little teary in the corner of my eye.
Absolutely. Particularly... in the Regent's Park. I still can't.
Oh, yeah.
I can't watch that without just being like...
yeah. When the just, baker when the baker hits things. And his wife is like... Ugh.
Yep.
You know, drive the dagger deeper.
There's so much there. Even James Corden does it well.
It's so good.
So good. Yeah. So, all that to say, you know, you just can't improve it because it's pretty damn great.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. We know nothing. Sorry. You're just nice. I'm not good, I'm not nice, I'm just right. I'm the witch, you're the world. I'm the hitch, I'm what no one believes. I'm the witch, you're all liars and thieves. Like his father, like his son will be too. Oh, why bother? You'll just do what you do as the at you fast midnight. Soon you'll see the sky fall. Here you want a bean, have another bean. Beans were made for making you rich. Plant them and they soar. Here you want some more. Listen to the roar, giants by the score. Well, you can blame another witch. It's the last midnight. It's the last verse. Now before it's past midnight, I'm leaving you my life. Let's talk about the witch. People have just skipped to this moment.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUPS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUPSmusical.com.
That's all they've done. Let's talk witch.
Yeah.
Let's just instantly preface as well, if you've not watched Tommy's miscast witches video, go watch that right now because that will catch you up to speed with, oh, I wonder which one they like the best. We're not going to be talking about that. My number one is Hannah Waddingham. There you go. My number two is Bernadette.
Great choice. Great choice.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Thank you very much. So that's out the way. We don't need to talk about that. Let's talk about one of the greatest characters ever written.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? If you're not playing Mama Rose, you're playing the witch.
You're playing the witch. And I would say the witch is more multidimensional than Mama Rose.
I would agree. You know, again, and in many ways, that's because of the time that it was written.
Yeah, absolutely. Fair. Yes.
But I would completely, because there's just, there's 90 million things you can do with this character.
Uh-huh. And they've all been done.
Literally all been done. Yeah. So, but basically, let's talk about kind of who she is in the story.
Yeah.
So, in the majority of Act 1, we see the witch as the witch that we know and love and that we've
the fairy tale witch. The underappreciated comedy line. Who could that be? It's the witch from next door!
Exactly.
It's so funny.
Why is that funny?
They could just say, it's the witch! They could just say that line. And it would have the same story-moving effect. But they don't. They say, it's the witch from next door. Because we live in a world where a witch lives next door.
Okay.
It's funny.
Uproariously funny.
And it's really underappreciated. And I wish I could figure out a way to sell it better.
It's okay. It's, you know, there's lots of other funny moments. Maybe focus on those, and that's fine. But yeah, so the witch, she lives next door to the baker and his wife.
Yeah.
And that's very important.
Yeah.
Because her and the baker's dad have a bit of beef going on.
Yeah. Well, she's the answer to the question. I forget what playwriting directing book I read this in, but one of the first questions you should answer about any show is, why today? Why is this story happening in this moment to these people right now? And the reason is the witch decided, today, I will reverse this spell.
Exactly. You wish to have the curse reversed.
Yeah. And then in the movie, they try to add on some extra layer about the moon, and I don't understand.
Yeah. That's another story. Never mind. Anyway. So how many times are we going to do that this podcast?
Two so far. Ding, ding, ding.
Yep. So one of the greatest things, so you get that witch, you know, classic, ugly and haggard and funny and quirky. But one of the greater things about her is you actually start to see, well, who is this witch? You know, what are her motivations? And it's not just, I want to become beautiful again. Sure, that's a big one. But you get to see this relationship she has with Rapunzel. And I'm going to extend that out into the macroverse and her relationship as a mother.
Yeah.
And how she feels as a mother. Yeah. And I think that is what makes this character stunning.
Yeah. I think one of the more underappreciated lines in the show is during the Witch and Rapunzel song, where the witch sings, I am old, I am ugly, I embarrass you. You are ashamed of me, you are ashamed of me. You don't understand. Because that is the moment we see that her motivation to become beautiful is more than just a motivation to become beautiful. It is a part of her caretaking. It is a part of, like, making sure she can be the best mother she can be. And, you know, we also see her failing at it spectacularly in a bunch of ways.
Well, but this is, so this is the thing, is like, she fails, but God, how many mothers can relate to that? Like, I ain't a mother. I don't have kids. But, you know, I've got one. And mine did very well. I'm not saying that my mother. But she sent me to, she passed me to an island and a desert. And, like, you know, it was like, no, but as in, you know, we all have mothers and we can relate to our experience with that. And this idea of, I'm not perfect. I'm trying so hard to get this right. I'm doing all I can.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
Is the most heartbreaking thing.
And we see
it's so heartbreaking.
We see it with the witch. I mean, this is a show about children and parents, bar none. You know, Jack's mother, like, head in a sack, Jack, and, like, the Jack's mother and, the baker's wife interaction, which is so
funny. Oh my God, like, that's okay too.
That's okay
heartbreaking,
too. Heartbreaking and
so funny. Or riotously funny, depending on your...
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and like all at once, you're like, ho, ho, ho!
Yeah. You know,
and like,
all depends on that line delivery.
But she still loves him and dies for him. Like,
exactly. Exactly. And then, but it extends out further. You've got the giant.
You've got the, yep.
You know, she doesn't have, it's not her son that's been killed, but she's still a older woman, do you know what I mean? And has that capacity to be a maternal figure.
Yeah. And is for got... Jack, who betrays her, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very good point. You've got Cinderella's stepmother.
Right.
Who, although not perfect, has her moments where she kind of justifies her beans. She justifies why she does things. We've got the baker's wife who becomes, you know, that is like, there's so many, this is the show for the mum.
Yeah. And we see it most, like, everyone else in their parentalness through this is on one side of the journey. Either like, we're trying to have the child, or we already did, and like, Jack's an idiot, but he's gonna be okay.
Yep.
But the witch is the one who has the, like, teenage daughter who, what do? There's men climbing into her window at night, and that's her biggest fear in the world.
Exactly, exactly. And one of the things, and I kind of started to click onto this whilst we were researching for this, the one of the things that always gets me, because I'm like, ah, God, it's so true, is when... she's like, well, how many wolves have you carved up to Little Red? And she's like, well, a wolf's different. And then she's like, ask a wolf's mother.
Yeah.
And I'm always just like, well, you've won. I can't fight with that one. Yep. Like, that always rings out with me. But that's something that's actually really consistent throughout the whole piece. Like, she never looks at anyone as, well, you're a human.
Right.
You're not a human.
Yeah.
So... you're better than that person. Even herself as a witch, she never thinks, I'm a witch, therefore I'm actually superior to all of you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She sees everyone on a level playing field.
And
I find that it's fascinating.
So and it's all right there. And like, we've taken paragraphs and paragraphs to, you know, extol upon it and talk about it. And like, I'm not good, I'm not bad, I'm just right.
Yep.
Is... you know, a 6-word, 17, however many word way of saying all that. Like, I'm the witch,
exactly.
You're the world, I'm the witch, I'm what no one believes, I'm the witch, you're all liars and thieves. Like, it's the simplicity these vastly complex concepts are communicated.
For sure.
Is baffling.
And I think, I don't know, I find it really cool, though, that at the end of Last Midnight, after she says those lines, she goes to her mother.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's where she goes back to. She's like, I've tried and I've failed.
Yep.
All right, let's just, you know, I'm coming back to you.
Yeah. Who knows if you're right, but it's better than here.
Yeah, exactly. And I just find that really, I don't know, it gets me so much, because I feel like as a mother, that must be one of your things where you have to be the bad guy. Yeah. You have to make these decisions where they're not based on what's right.
Yeah. Well, because you don't extrapolate back the witch's backstory, and it just becomes more fascinating and complex. Like there's not much that gives you this in the show, but the beans live in what is the witch's mother's garden, maybe at that point, and are magic and special and, you know, must be guarded. And it's ostensibly the witch's duty to supervise them. And she doesn't messes up because the baker's father steals them, and then is punished for that by being turned ugly, which is, you know, if we're classifying witches and witches' mothers as this kind of, like, logical, do what's right sort of thing, that, you know, you were supposed to do this, you didn't do this, and here's your punishment.
Yep.
It's like different parenting styles through the eyes of weird fairy tale creatures.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that's kind of who she is. And there's, again, the moral of Into the Woods podcast. There's 50 gazillion more things that we could talk about there.
Yeah.
But one of the things I do want to kind of hit home on is in the song cut from the show, well, kind of swapped into Last Midnight, it's called Boom Crunch, which is on the original cast record. I don't know if it's a deluxe edition, but it's whatever one I've got on my iTunes. Is there, so you can listen to it. And it sounds like a Kate Bush song. It's great. And she says, one of the lines is, evil. She points them all. Says, evil. Want to know what's evil? Nice people's lies. And again, I remember when the first time I was there, I was like, holy moly.
Yeah.
I was like, that's so true.
Yeah.
That is so true.
What a great because that. Track.
It's tied into the whole piece. That one, those three words, mm-hmm. three words tie into the whole thing of
yeah.
the reason that we're here is yeah. because you, with the best intentions, were dishonest.
Yeah.
And that's why we're in this mess. And that's how these yeah. things happen.
Yeah. And, you're still questioning as to whether that's right. Because on the other hand, you have the baker's wife, probably one of the most sympathetic characters in musical theater, who yeah. has a whole song about the ends justifying the means.
And exactly.
are the lies we tell worth it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Who knows? And that's the point. So I'm confused uh-huh. because here Tommy has written, Last Midnight is a great name. Like Everything's Coming Up Roses. Yet another Gypsy Witch reference here. But Tommy,
Sondheim writes in whichever hat book, the goal with Everything's that. Coming Up Roses was to find a phrase that felt like it was an idiom and felt like it had existed forever, but
right,
was
yes.
new to the show. And it's to the point where that may even be a surprise that Everything's Coming Up Roses uh-huh. wasn't a phrase before Gypsy.
Yeah, because we all know that the original phrase is Everything's Coming Up Millhouse.
Right, exactly. but It's the Last Midnight is like that for me. It tickles me in an interesting way that I am, you know, struggle to point out quite how, but like
uh-huh.
in the song, it's not the last midnight. The last midnight happened in Act One. The last midnight they fed the cow. Like, if we're talking about them talking about three midnights, the last one was in the middle of Act One. But here, it's the last midnight. Like, this is the last of the last chances where it's all dark after this. There will be no more midnights after this. And it's already pretty spooky right now. And this is a, you know, underappreciated Sondheim talent to like find these titles and find these turns of phrase that just seem like they're in the vernacular, but aren't. I don't know if anyone ever said it's the last midnight before Stephen Sondheim put it in the song. In that particular way. But I wouldn't be surprised if you look it up in like an idiom dictionary and it's like, it's the last midnight. This is the end of the line. This is where it all comes to a head. Like,
yeah.
it just sounds like one of those, you know, turn of the tongue flipping phrases.
Yeah. No, I do know. I mean, I never really thought about that before.
Isn't that? I find it so cool in obviously a very difficult to describe way.
I think it exists a lot in Into the Woods, actually, that kind of idea, because I remember the first time I watched it being certain that I knew a story about the bakers and being like, no, that is a fairy tale, and argued with people and being like, no, it is a fairy tale. It's, the one.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And I had nothing. Yeah. I had nothing. I think in the end I came up with the fact that Rapunzel's parents in Rapunzel were bakers. And I was like, that's what it is. It's just that. And that's just not true.
I mean,
what is it? It's so weird.
It's the same. I mean, the man is God. It is like the things he writes seem so clever that no one could have possibly written them. They must have just always existed.
Yeah.
And, you know, he used them. But that's not true. Like,
the stone tablets of Mount Sinai created by Sondheim.
And he doesn't, you know, he gets plenty of plaudits for everything, of course. But he doesn't get plaudits for some of these. It's the last midnight. It's the last wish. It's the last midnight. It's the boom squish. Like, simple, elegant, everything you need to know. We already had the motif of midnights being a deadline. We already had the idea of wishes being a thing that everyone wants. And this is the last of both of them coming together, the darkness and the light. Like, in, you know, one-syllable, two-syllable words that simply rhyme with each other. There's no, this isn't a clever internal Sondheim rhyme. This isn't something that rhymes 15 times in a row. This isn't an unexpected rhyme. And it's still so clever and so elegant.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well done, Sondy. Before we move on from The Witch, though, let's talk a little bit about Our Little World.
Yeah.
So we spoke about this before.
Who casually. Did you put it in when you did it?
Yeah.
Okay. Why?
So, not for the reasons you're supposed to.
Okay.
We put it in because we just really like the song and think it's a beautiful song. So, this is the way that Sondheim talks about the song is that it's like a chance for you to see the witch have a nice moment with Rapunzel. Otherwise, it's just, you know, her really grinding on Rapunzel. But the kind of dramaturgical issue with that is the witch gets into this kind of open light. So what the song ends up just becoming is, isn't it funny watching a witch climb up someone's hair?
Right, yeah.
And that's what it becomes. She jested
and drool. Yeah.
Yeah. So don't tell Joseph Weinberger, but we didn't do that. We didn't do a climb because we didn't stage that.
Yeah.
So we just had the song.
Okay.
And I think it's really, really beautiful and nice.
Yeah.
And for the kind of witch that we were telling, we really needed it.
Okay.
Because we were focusing on the witch as a mother and the witch
and
her relationship with that.
That's useful dramaturgically that way, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And so it made more sense when we got to the alternate lyrics in Last Midnight.
Right. About taking another child and...
And you're so pure. Yes, exactly. And it was about the witch wanting to take this child to safety.
I do definitely think both those alternate lyrics go hand in hand. If you do one, you should do the other. If you don't do one, you maybe shouldn't do the other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I would agree. I mean, with the kind of original Last Midnight, the witch's end is more moral, I would say. More, it's more of her on the outside.
Yeah.
Looking in.
Yeah.
Which is a completely, completely justified way to play the witch. But she does also have this human side, almost, where it's her as a mother and how she fits in with that. And she's one of the only characters who really gets an arc in that respect because she has a child, she loses a child, she has the opportunity to get another child and do it again.
Yeah.
And she doesn't because she can't cope with the world anymore. Do you know what I mean? It's just gotten too much for her. And again... heartbreaking, and that's why I love Hannah Waddingham, because I think she does it perfectly.
Yeah, I agree.
That's the witch that I love. It's in the same with Mama Rose, to tie it right back.
Yep.
My favorite is 2008 Patti LuPone. Everyone can shoot me for liking Patti LuPone. I don't care. 2008 Patti LuPone, because of that ending, because of that arc, that story that you're telling with that Mama Rose, that story that you're telling with this witch. That's why I love.
That is really interesting. I didn't think about like that. Because for me, the brief scene moments we see with the witch can be enough. Like where she has her, like, you know, she shows up and shoots the baker and his wife in the crotch and like has a half a sentence and then hears, another theme we didn't talk about. And then like, oh, my Rapunzel, isn't she beautiful? Like... It's enough for me to see that the witch loves Rapunzel. And I don't know if we need to see much of Rapunzel's relationship with her fake mother. You know? I don't know how much that gives us to see. Because even in Our Little World, it's still if she just didn't drool. Like, I still see that as, like,
well,
Rapunzel singing through gritted teeth. Not 100%, but she's a teenager.
Yeah.
She doesn't say things like, I love you, Mom, you know?
No, she doesn't, but it's just, it's like, this is the world I know, and I want to see something more. It is that you're kind of giving Rapunzel that flash. Because Rapunzel is completely underwritten in the show.
And I think
you have to agree with that.
From my end and my perspective, that leads more into the reason to adding Our Little World. But that's because I live in High School Musical theater world, and it's...
Yeah, exactly.
But it's
still... But even, I just think she plays... Otherwise, she just becomes this little foil to the witch.
Yeah.
And even then, it's not that great a foil because you don't get to see them in their normal state. You don't get to see status quo,
right.
Witch Rapunzel. You yeah. always get to see
yeah.
witch on Rapunzel's ass for,
right.
you know,
which makes it maybe a little jarring at that
yeah,
point.
Yeah, I think so. It makes the witch look a yeah. lot more callous
yeah.
Than yeah. what she is.
I
know?
I do, the thing I juggle is I think we're pushing the bladder quotient here. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, this show, even without Our Little World, is still pushing yeah. like 245.
Yeah.
And that's a long show. And we need it all. It's all important.
For sure.
I wouldn't know something. I saw a production that was cut down a little bit. They cut Our Little World. They cut one of the Midnights, or at least cut it down pretty dramatically.
Okay, interesting, yeah.
And I
yeah.
think there were a couple verses that they cut here and there. They got it yeah. down. They got it down to like 220,
right?
But I don't know. Like at that point, you're like, you know, that seems like a business choice. I don't know if there's something to trade for Our Little World, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I don't think there is. It's the same with but way back when
mm-hmm.
when we talked about Sweeney Todd.
Oh,
I remember 48 episodes ago, but we were like, what would you cut?
Yeah.
And you kind of can't. You know yeah. what I mean? There's not really anything there. It's
yeah.
it's a kind of perfect specimen.
Yeah, it really is. And there's not a lot of like verse, chorus, verse songs either where you can
yeah.
chop things down like that. A couple of
yeah.
the interludes, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. everything comes back. Everything's important. And, you know, like, you could cut the, like, golden goose, I dare you to go back up there, Little Red and Jack scene.
No, you couldn't.
It's in your fault. And,
exactly.
like, you'd lose. We could, that would be the first time we hear about it. You know, it
yeah.
becomes a less strong story if you
yeah.
cut stuff. But then, you know, that's a whole other bag of worms. And I guess
it's another story, never mind. Anyway,
three,
Alexis
ding,
Michelle.
Ding, ding, ding,
ding, ding, ding. If this was a YouTube video, we'd definitely have a counter going. Alexis Michelle, just to round off the witches. This is how Tommy rounded off his miscast witches, and I completely support him in his decision to do this. Season 9, RuPaul Drag Race fame, Alexis Michelle, Broadway queen.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has to be the best transformation that exists.
Yeah, take that, Rodgers and Hammerstein, Cinderella and Elsa.
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Did you just say Elsa?
Shh.
Did you just give a spoil?
Disney will sue me. Spoiler alert,
oh, yeah.
in the middle of Let It Go, she changes outfits.
Great. Oh, by the way, I've also got another drag queen who does a great rendition of Let It Go that may top your... Elsa.
I bet you it's better than the one from the Headed to Broadway musical Frozen.
It's okay. Maybe they've got plenty of time.
Discussion
got
for another day.
I've got
just
I've
a
got
little
faith.
Bit. Of, that's okay.
I've got faith.
Anyway,
let me have my faith.
Watch Alexis yeah. Michelle on YouTube.
yeah, exactly. She's in the show notes.
I'm meeting you in the woods. Moonlight. What dangers? I know we'll get past the woods. And once. Let's hope the changes last. Beyond woods, beyond witches and slippers and hoods, just the two of us, beyond lies, safe at home with our beautiful prize. Just a few of us, it takes trust. It takes just a bit more and we're done. We want four, we have none, we've got three. We need one, it takes two.
The Bakers.
So, yeah, we've talked about the witch. Let's talk about the newbies.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's up for debate who the protagonist of the show is. I don't know. The Baker? Throwing that one out there.
What, just the one?
The Baker's wife dies. The witch leaves. The Baker survives. That would be my
That's
justification.
True. He gets to the end. He gets
the Baker
the
makes
end.
It to the end, and your protagonist might want to survive your whole story. But even then, it's a, you know, I think the Baker's wife goes through more interesting changes earlier. I think the witch goes through more interesting changes over the both of them. But the Bakers are the new story for this show.
Yes, they are indeed. They are indeed. So, do we know why that they were included?
Well, So there's, I think, some just logistical parts about them. They're the ones who has to go to find all the other things from the other stories. But I think, I have all my Sondheim research muddled up, but I think it's in Look I Made A, where Sondheim talks about the Bakers being the modern family tale.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So and that's, it's like they're like a suburban family dropped into a storybook.
Which was a revelation to me, like 15 years into listening to Into the Woods.
Totally.
Like, and then you listen to them, they don't talk like fairy tale people. They don't have lines like fairy tale people. This is why I think it's funny when the baker goes, "It's the witch from next door," because it, you know, imagining a New York man, businessman with wife in their apartment going like, "Oh, it's the witch from, you know, the floor below us," like, is silly and funny. And like, they have, you know, the baker's like, "Oh, I stole it from a maiden in a tower," like. They have the poking the fun lines at the fairy tale stuff.
They've got, I mean, she's got, "This is ridiculous, what am I doing here? I'm in the wrong story." Right. Do you know what I mean? She's got the only aside that...
Yeah. The, you know, my husband's undoing a spell. Ooh. Like, they have these lines. Whereas, you know, I have a goose that lays golden eggs. He sees no irony in that. He sees nothing funny about that. And like, Joanna Gleason, who she will ever be for me, not the baker's wife, pulled it from Maiden in a Tower. Like, it's nothing.
And it's like when she sits down with Cinderella to chat about the prince, it's like little like girl gossip. It's like, oh my God, what's he like?
Yeah. And Cinderella doesn't do those things, you know, like when I entered, they trumpeted, like, they're, you know, in my mind, they are a tinge of British accents, whereas the baker and his wife are Americans, which speaks to my own stereotypes, but
but that's okay. You're
there's
right.
something about that, which is cool and clever and another edge to this show, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I just think I really like them because they are the kind of suburban family dropped in, it allows you to kind of have set yourself on the stage. That's your opportunity to have that. It's the audience can be like, the humans.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? A very human problem that they have, you know, they want to have a child. It's not, I wish that I was married to a prince,
I want to go to the festival, like,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's not any of these things. It's just, I want a child.
And you listen to all of their morals of the stories during each of the midnights, and like every, you know, the slotted spoon won't hold much soup. Like, you know, never wear mauve to a ball
or pink.
Right, the baker and the baker's wife, like, you may know what you need, but to get what you want, better see that you keep what you have. Like, they got the goods, they got the stuff, they got the morals that, like, apply to you. Screw the slotted spoon.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, kind of culminating in Act Two, any moment, any moment, correct. Mm. And No More, again, are very relatable.
Yes.
Compared to the other three.
They're Giants in the Sky, or I Was Swallowed by a Wolf.
With that. Yeah, I guess I had the wolf thing.
The other ones are the other ones are metaphors. The other three are like, you are extrapolating what being eaten by a wolf means to you.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You, Jimmy, are never going to get eaten by a wolf. You might experience something that feels like that, but the, you know, was that me? Was that him? Did a prince really kiss me and kiss me? And did I kiss him back? And do I like my husband? Or do I like this prince? Yeah. You know, that's
something we can all relate to
every day of my life.
Exactly.
No, that's not true.
No, it's not. I'm telling. No. I do. I totally get in as well with No More. Mm-hmm. It's that I can't be dealing with any of this. I'm running away from my life. Yeah. Like,
the baker's whole song is like, no more of your fairy tale bullshit. Yep. No more riddles, no more quests, no more curses you can't undo, no more giants waging, like, can't we just pursue our lives with our children and our wives till that happier day arrives? Like, can't we just be humans without all the magic fairy tale stuff around us?
For sure.
Which is so that, invigorating.
Yeah. I guess it makes a lot of sense that the characters written for this show don't get their... like moral light bulb moment until act two in the gray and the muck and in the mire, because they don't have a story. Do you know what I mean? They don't have a relatable thing. You know, like we said, and these things are epigenetic.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? The Baker's one isn't epigenetic.
Yeah.
And it's life.
And then the beautiful pinnacle icing cherry on top of the whole thing is the Baker's story becomes this story you just watched, which is messy, which doesn't have a happy ending, which is filled with ambiguous gray level morals, because that's how life actually is. It's not filled with giants and witches and curses.
Exactly. And they become, that's it, is they just become a story. They're not real life anymore. They're in the past, and it's something that you can learn from, as opposed to having to experience for yourself. It's a really, really smart thing to do than just make it your, you know, Super Smash Brothers style, oh, let's see what happens when this character plays against this character.
Right.
To give your audience a way into this, and to give them
to
be able to put themselves on the stages. It's real, real smart.
Ah, it's so beautiful. Can I run past you, you know? As I said, I spend my whole life revising musicals in my head. This is one I've gone back and forth on in my mind, because I used to think it was the lyric, and it's not. In Moments in the Woods.
Yes.
Just remembering you've had an and when you're back to or. The original lyric is, makes the or mean more than it did before.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the lyric was, makes the or mean more than he did before. And I've gone back and forth on liking different ones both ways.
I prefer it.
Okay.
Because that's what she's been talking about.
Uh-huh.
But also, it's so implied.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? I think it's the same as the In the Belly of the Wolf, Land of the Giant.
Yeah.
in that it's like, by the way, I'm talking about the tryst I just had.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If you say that, whereas it's nicer if she's just, if she takes the moment to look at the scarf.
Yeah.
And be like, there it is. And you get that as an audience member, then you get that.
Yeah.
Rather than having to be like, by the way, I'm talking about people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why I would go for it.
For me, it's the difference between talking about people and talking about options. So the first, just remembering you've had an and when you're back to or makes the or mean more than it did before is, to me, the Baker's wife, it means a lot to me that I have this choice between these two men, thinking that for a brief moment I had both of them. Whereas if you phrase it the other way, makes the or mean more than he did before, it changes to me the meaning, like, remembering you've had an and your secret tryst with the prince, who maybe doesn't care about you, makes the or mean more than he, your husband, the baker, who's stuck next to you, mean more than he did before this secret tryst. But I don't know which I like more. And I don't think this is a thought that Sondheim's ever had. And that's why I'm excited to have it out loud.
That's fair. I mean, I'm total camp it. You would never get me in camp he, I'm afraid. Just because I think it plays into the whole ambiguity of the whole show. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it could mean Tris, but it could also mean the other 90 million decisions you have to make in your life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think, that's why I like it.
Yeah. These are the decisions that keep me up at night about musicals I haven't written.
That's fair. That's fair. One day you'll be able to write the, well, no, you'll think it's the perfect one.
Yeah.
And then there'll be someone who'll write a little comment and be like, by the way,
there'll be like a new stupid musical theater podcast that's just ripping my musical to shreds and is going to make me feel like an awful human being.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter, because you'll have your Tony.
That's right. I'll still invite them to New York to come see the show.
That's so nice.
beanstalk, then what's queer is how did the second giant get down here in the first place, second place?
Yeah, how?
Well, who had the other bean?
The other bean.
The other bean.
You pocketed the other bean.
I didn't. Yes, I did.
So it's yours.
No, it isn't, because I gave it to my wife.
So it's hers.
No, it isn't.
Then who is it?
Wait a minute. She exchanged that bean to obtain your shoe, so the one who knows what happened to the bean is you.
You mean that old bean that your wife... Oh, dear, but I never knew, and so I do. Well, don't look here. So it's your fault, honey.
See, it's her fault.
But she
didn't. And it isn't mine at all.
But what?
Well, if you hadn't gone back up again...
We were needy.
We were greedy. Did you need that hay?
But I got it from my mother.
So it's her fault, then. Yes, but what about the harp in the third place?
The harp, yes. What, you dare me to?
I dared you to?
You dared me to. She said that I was scared to. She dared.
No, I
so
didn't.
It's your fault.
Wait a minute.
You
hadn't dared him to.
And you had left the harp alone.
You hadn't thrown away
the first
beans
place.
In the first place. She hadn't thrown
yes,
it in the first place.
Hadn't raised it, it in the first place. Beans in the first place. It's your fault. You're responsible. You're the one to blame. It's your fault.
So, I mentioned before that I have co-directed Into the Woods. Pause for applause. Thank you. Yeah.
So you've worked on the show once?
Just the once, yeah.
I want you to guess how many times I've worked on that show.
Oh, I don't want to know. I know you've been in it. I know you've been in it. We've all seen that now. And if you haven't, link in the description.
Oh,
is it in a video?
Yeah, there's a whole video of me watching it and getting really sappy and emotional about my high school life.
Great. Well, that'll be join Tommy in that. You have a really cute hat, though, and I think that's what's important.
It covered my face all the time. I've worked on this show 5 times.
5 times? Mm-hmm. Wow.
I was in it, I lit it once, and then have been on the teacher side a couple different times. Mm-hmm. Not mm-hmm. particularly my choice, not that I wouldn't choose it, but, you know, just other people have done it when I've been around.
Yeah.
It's like Into the Woods is reaching Shakespeare level of interpretation,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, let's do Romeo and Juliet in space.
In a barn.
Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah.
Where no one moves on stage, or like where everyone...
Gender bending.
Where everyone's like a puppet except one of the background characters.
Yeah.
Where they're played by robots. Like...
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's an Into the Woods inside a piano. There's an Into the Woods in an attic. There's several Into the Woods that happen outside. There's one that happens like inside a child's bed where the whole thing comes to life.
There's one that's like a hipster version. There's one that's like a Vivian Westwood version.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, yeah, there's lots. There's lots in there. If you tease apart.
Yeah.
But the question is, well, I mean, that's great, and that's very cool. In no way are we discrediting that.
Yeah, I think it's great.
And in many ways, you know, when I return back and I watch the Broadway, I'm like, this is far too literal.
Yeah, like, how simple? There are no books on stage. Like,
yeah, exactly. It's like, you're in a dirndl? What the hell?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There is an element of that. Like,
I
where's
want
your
the
concept
layers.
Here?
Give me the layers.
Yeah, where's your concept? Where's your extra bits?
Yeah.
Give me your extra. I don't just want to see the story played out.
Right.
And it is, yeah, it's a total, I don't know, it's a total thing. For the record, ours was relatively straight. We had some funky costumes. They were beautifully designed by the university costume designing department. But it was relatively straightforward.
It does make me, it's one of the things that made me so surprised about the 2014 Disney movie was how, again, literal it was. And I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't quite
that.
Yeah, and then like literal except Johnny Depp was in a zoot suit, like,
yes, actually,
you know,
like, that's a really good point.
One or two, like, wait a minute.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is it was literal, but like also, you know, Jack dressed like a child of the 70s.
Yeah. And like they're playing fast and loose with how the narrator exists.
Yeah, but we don't talk about that.
Right. And so, you know, it seems a part of the story, especially with the, you know, the whole meta-ness of it and killing the narrator halfway through. It's an invitation to add layers, I would say. Mm-hmm.
For sure. For sure. And I always think that's a really good thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, this has a fantastic life in high schools.
Oh, yes.
Across the globe.
God, yes.
And that's where you get to sink your teeth into things. That's where you get to learn as a director. You know, for me and Julian, this was such a good playing ground where it was like, let's do some fun shit.
Yeah.
And have fun and start, you know, work out stories and make some cool choreography and things like that. So I think it's a great, great thing.
Yeah.
One thing I don't think is great is low budget Milky Way.
Oh man, have you seen the Tumblr?
It's just my favorite.
It's just
my favorite thing in the world. My favorite. I'll put my favorite, absolute all time favorite one in the
in the show in notes.
The show notes, where it's a giraffe. It's not a cow. But that Tumblr needs to be.
It's such a hard one because
I know
it's such a halfway character and like. There's so many funny things about, you know, in the middle of Act 1 when the baker just picks it up by its handle and runs away with it. But there's so many funny things about, you know, it's a person inside of a suit and then suddenly it starts doing the dance moves with everyone.
Yeah.
And like, or like when it dies and like, it's hard to pick the right one. You know, my favorite low budget Milky White? It's not on the Tumblr, it's on the YouTube.
Is it the leg?
It's the one where Jack knocks off the paper mache leg into the audience.
But also, just props that guy for going with it.
Oh,
like,
he really,
like, that is a good lesson in ad-libbing right there.
It's one of, I'm not usually a big fan of what people would term amateur theater bloopers. They usually make my skin crawl. But that's one that is, like, such an accident. And everyone sees it, and you're right there with them, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's a ridiculous thing that shouldn't have happened in real life. What are you going to do now?
And he goes that he does really, really well.
Yep.
But their mysterious man looks really weird.
I mean, look at some of the original witches. It's not, there's precedent.
Very true. Very, very true. No, it's just funny. And it's one of those things, though. I love going to see Into the Woods's.
Oh, I would go see one in a heartbeat anywhere.
Yeah, because I'm just like, what are you going to do with it?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think that's so exciting.
I don't know if I quite feel that with any other show. I don't know if I would ever get bored of seeing the show live.
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. And I would see a like dirty, dirty amateur version of this. Not dirty as in like dirty.
Yeah.
But like
amateur.
Like I would kind of be down with it.
I have something scarier to say. I would be down going to see a junior version of this.
You would just go for the Act 1?
I'd go for the Act 1. Middle school is doing it. Because it's such a... Even Act 1 is a great story. And I am sad that it's missing Act 2. And I also don't think Act 2 is terribly inappropriate for the you know, kids who usually just do the junior version. I don't think it's much more difficult. I think you could do a kids version that has both, that is, you know, hacked and slashed down to an hour, but still has Act 1 and Act 2. But I still go just see Act 1.
Yeah.
Just to see kids do it.
But interestingly, I think Act 1 also has some heavy stuff in there.
Oh, yeah.
That is like, just really what we should do with kids? And I'm going to talk about Little Red here.
They kill the wolf.
Well, yeah. But, you know, ask a wolf's mother. It's that part. We don't get to that. In this story, it's just the wolf died because he's bad.
That's
bad
true.
Old wolf.
Yeah.
But, so what do you think about the whole... sex thing?
I think, especially, so precedent was set with the original Broadway production and the wolf doubling with Cinderella's prince. And we're drawing a line there between sex-crazed men.
Yes.
Whether they wear prince's clothing or wolf's clothing, we still have a lot of the same assumptions about them.
For sure.
So I think that's one thing. I do... You know, the story is about that. If we're talking about the Brothers Grimm kind of didicism moral of the story, don't talk to strangers because, you know, they'll
steal your Hyman blood red cape. Yeah.
Like, it's right there. And, you know, they don't shy away with it in the other places. So why shy away with it there? And I do think, especially, so this is where I think the dramaturgy. This is where I think the dramaturgical structure of it is so important. Little Red is the key into our stereotype of these fairy tales. She's the first person to sing the words into the woods to grandmother's house. Like, it's almost her theme to start us off with. And she, like, we need some exposition of Cinderella getting the dress, but that might as well be part of the prologue. It's like prologue plus. And then we go straight into Cinderella. Then we go straight into Little Red. And so kind of hitting us across the face with that wolf outfit, which may not be the best choice of words.
No.
It sets you up with that beginning that, like, hey, we're, you know, this is not Disney's fairy tales. Like, we're going to lean into this a little bit. And, you know, no one's dying. And it's also, like, the wolf doesn't sing anything too overt. And it's, like, it's in that kids movie realm still where, like, you can look past the dirty joke. But it's important dramaturgically to build us to that, to set us up for the deaths, to set us up for some of the darker themes we're going to hit later on by letting you know right away in a funny way, in a way that you can laugh at in an uncomfortable way, that this wolf is considering both Little Red and Granny as sex objects.
Yeah. I think it's so important that you cover it.
Yeah.
Because it's a part of growing up that doesn't get talked about otherwise.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's Little Red is the story that we explore that with.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's in The Brothers Grimm and also in Into the Woods. I would say this is, you know, it's a huge part of growing up is exploring that side of things and maybe straying from the path and lingering a bit longer around some flowers.
Yeah.
You know, it is extremely important. And also, it helps back up what happens in Act Two with Cinderella's Prince.
Yeah, and it makes I Know Things Now a more important song. It is the metaphor of I Know Things Now. Without that, I Know Things Now is a song about how, you know, a cape and a hood aren't going to protect you from a furry mammal. But with the metaphor, it's, you know, I know things now, many terrible things that I hadn't thought to explore. Like, I've learned a couple things.
You go through a little change.
And I'm excited and I'm scared and I don't like it and I do like it and I don't know.
Yeah, totally. And again, I think very, very important that the wolf and the prince are played by the same actor. And I get, obviously, high school.
Right.
You can't do that all the time. And that's okay. We didn't do it in our show. They weren't by the same actor.
And strangely, they didn't do it in previews. That's a Broadway edition, is the double.
Interesting.
It was more, like, I think, I'm going to get this wrong, but I think the mysterious man and one of the princes doubled, and the wolf...
And the narrator?
And the narrator, maybe? There was, like, weird, unintentional doubling.
Interesting.
And then they swapped it for Broadway, and it made more sense.
So just because of the fact that the characters are linked by their lines, so in Hello, Little Girl, he says, exploring something, one would be so boring.
Yeah.
When he's talking to her about, you know, the paths and... You know, it's fun to just explore as many as you can. Because in Moments in the Woods, Cinderella's Prince then again says
the same thing.
One would be so boring, just one. But yeah, that's a surprise to me.
Right?
If they weren't linked originally.
Yeah. I mean, it just, you know, we're thinking about it with 2020 hindsight. They made a discovery at some point in the story and tied their story closer together.
Mm.
Like, how wonderful that they made this choice in their revisionary stages.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, yeah, I think it's important just because it's the two times in the show where they talk about sex.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, it's how overt you go with it is up to you.
Yeah.
We were reasonably overt in ours, but...
It's always difficult, especially with it being such a high school show.
I know.
That's a sticky point. Again, maybe not the best choice.
Choices!
But okay, let's talk about death too, because that's the other, you know, sex and death. These are
let's talk about death.
These
absolutely
are the dirty things. I will say, and this was rolling around in my mind when we were talking about the Bakers earlier, the Baker's wife's death is the only one that's not funny. And not that the other ones are like haha funny,
yeah,
but at least as originally staged, and I would say in the script, you know, mm-hmm, Rapunzel's death is off stage with, at least in the original Broadway, a very distinct squishing
squelch
sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is like a cringe laugh. It's like, ho, 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 ho.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, Jack's mother gets bonked on the head in front of people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can only, because we know it's theater and the artifice is there, like, she's mm-hmm not actually dead. But the baker's wife dying is, you know, we see the beginning of it. There are screams. We know that death is already a thing. It's not, you know, you're not going to find anything accidentally funny about it, which is important, yeah, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
But it's...
definitely.
You know, that was one of the big changes from the movie. They downplayed all the deaths except the baker's wife's.
Disagree on that one, Sonno.
Yeah?
Yeah, for sure. I will say Tracy Ullman's death was actually quite sad compared to the original Broadway where...
she runs off stage and there's...
Brian...
yeah.
No. Tracy Ullman played Jack's mother, sorry. She gets hit in the head in the original Broadway. She gets hit in the head and she's like, boom, and she stood up straight. Take care of Jack!
Does Tracy Ullman die in the movie? I seem to remember that she just disappears.
No, Jack's mother totally dies.
On
she gets
screen?
Flung onto the she gets flung onto the log and dies. And then obviously that's when, you know, Jack finds out later in No One Is Alone. BT tells your mother's dead.
I have no memory of this.
4,000% sure.
Huh.
Because that thing, she says that like, take care of Jack, take care of Jack.
Huh. I have no memory of this. Granted, I didn't I've watched the movie in theaters and never watched it again.
Yeah, that's fair. But yeah, so
then I get no other point because I'm wrong.
No, but other than that, it's weird because I think they almost downplay the baker's wife's death.
Okay.
And I think it comes mostly after the fact. And this is something that I do find a bit weird and kind of challenging in the show anyway, because you come out of any moment.
Mm-hmm.
Death into Your Fault, which is like a really fun, exciting comedy song that the baker is taking part in, and it's like he's suddenly forgot.
Well, Your Fault is a comedy song, but it's a dark comedy song. It's because of you. There's a giant in our midst, and my wife is dead. Like, it's shouty song
for sure. But then you know, things like that, which he has a light, like things like that. I find it a little bit tricky.
Yeah, that
there
is a tough.
I totally get why it's there, because you don't want to labor, you know,
right?
Like
then
the,
we're
the fastest is
otherwise it's that, and then Last Midnight, and then No More, and then Children Will Listen, and it's like from angry to sad.
Yeah,
the whole end of it.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. And it's, you know, you're not to labor over these deaths. That's kind of a key part of it.
Yeah.
But actually, one thing I really love about it is that you do get awkward laughs.
Yeah.
Because it's that eternal thing of like with catharsis, like you either laugh or you cry. You don't have the in between. And I think in Into the Woods, because there are these characters that you know and love, it does feel uncomfortable. You're like, she's dead.
Yeah.
And it is a bit awkward. And I think that's a really cool part of Act Two of Into the Woods, is that things just get quite awkward.
I have lots of feelings about this on a bunch of different levels. I think, I can't remember if I talk about one of them in the show. It's the only moment I've ever felt this is going to sound snooty and I'll rephrase afterwards, but it's the only moment I've felt really dissatisfied as an actor with a line never landing the way I want it to.
Right. Okay.
I'm Jack sitting in the tree with the baker during the, like, you know, your mother's dead, the steward killed him, and I can't remember the exact build-up, But at one point in the middle of No One Is Alone, mm-hmm. I have a line that's like, well, I'm going to kill him, about like mm-hmm. setting out to kill
for the steward,
for the steward. Steward. Yeah. And I see it from the audience's perspective. I'm a kid, you know, I'm a 7-8 year old uh-huh. kid. Like, no, I'm not. But from like, this is a dramatic moment. And like, I'm going to avenge my mother's death. I'm going to go mm-hmm. kill him. And I could never, it was always a laugh line. And I never intended it to be a laugh line. And yeah. it weirded me out. I've never, you know, I don't get a lot of accidental laughs. I feel like uh-huh. I'm pretty good at a punchline and knowing when it's going to be a punchline and setting that sort yeah. of stuff up. And Jack has plenty in the show. And like yeah. my other roles have had plenty. But that was when I was like, I didn't expect it to laugh. I don't know how I feel about it being a laugh line. I don't know if I should fix it. I don't know how to fix it because I thought I was being really earnest with it, which might have been what made it funny. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's strange. But I wonder that about moments, especially in the second half of Act Two.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's up to your audience.
Yeah,
you know how they take it, yeah. and a lot of it does really come down to the direction as to how tense you make it.
Yeah, I will. So to ask you, co-director, how did you end? No One Is Alone.
No One Is Alone. We completed it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a point of contention across the board. If this is a completely. Thing you haven't encountered with the production,
yeah, exactly.
And I don't. It's been so long. I don't even know what it says in the score.
It's no one is a.
Okay. As written, Sondheim pulls a Sweeney Todd, where what happened? You decide what's good. You decide alone. But no, I don't know how we get to that point at the very end, because this is one of the only verse, course, mm-hmm. verse,
hold
course,
him to the light now.
Yeah, let him see the glow. Things will be all right.
We're at the end of the show.
Oh, no, that's the end. That's too happy.
Yeah. Oh, no. Hard to see the light now. Just don't let it go. Things will be...
Make it so. Someone is on your side. And then as written, it goes... No one is boom, boom, boom. Giant stuff. Ah, you know, and like, there's a couple lines. They're like, quick, duck down. You know, da 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 da. And the idea is, this is an inappropriate place for an applause break. This is your audience psychology bit. Like, we don't want a button here. Whenever the audience claps, that brings us back into the theater and out of the action. And mm-hmm. Sondheim plays with this all the time, and I think is a big proponent of, like, if we need to be in the world right now, let's be in the world. And that's why this song doesn't end. But a lot of people put the ending in. No one is alone. And they hit some nice four-part harmony, and it's like, bum, bum, bing.
So I've just checked the score. I've just checked the score. It is actually in it.
It is but in it?
That's the licensed material. So
when we did it in high school, we didn't do that. And I don't, there have been different revisions of the licensed material of this too, which is a weird thing that I'm aware of in my life. I'm a proponent of not ending that song and letting it go straight boom 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 into the next thing, because mm-hmm. that's a moment you want to string through. I'm also a proponent, which I think is a 2002 revival thing that I like, that's like, you know, they kill the birds. It's a bit of the princes.
Mm-hmm. Let me pause. Sorry. Yeah. Let me pause. So they've written the music to complete it, but in the script, in the libretto section, it's just someone is on your side, we hear the giant approaching, and the distant song is interrupted. So it's like optional again?
Weird. That's weird that they don't specify too. That's just an incongruity on MTI's fault, or whoever your British licensor is. Strange. Yeah, but I think this string of moments is so important to me, because then they kill the giant. We see the big... I hate the giant's head. I'd love to not see the giant die, you know. Lights and sound and flashes.
Yeah, well, plaudits to Julian. I was really proud of the way we did our giant.
Yeah?
Yeah, totally his idea. I think it was his idea. It might have been our lighting designer, but I think it was him. So we use shadow play. Hi.
That's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So our theater, we're really fortunate to have a really deep theater. It wasn't the widest, but it was extremely deep. Mm-hmm. So we had set up a kind of psych, but it was almost like camouflage like okay. leaf cloth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, do you know, like jungle cloth?
I know exactly what you're talking about, and I could look it up in my Roscoe catalog right now. Yeah.
Yeah, let's get lots. So we had that, and it was like perfect. It was actually a proper serendipitous moment because we like built the set, and there was like something missing because it was just the black wall. And the guy who like ran the theater was like, oh, I think we've got like a cargo net. Let me just look. And we're just like, oh my god, get it on a bar right now, raise it up, and it's perfect. Anyway, so we, yeah, just like lit our giant, and it was just her shadow.
Oh, that's cool.
That you saw. And that's it, like, because nice. It was a way of getting big, and it was actually a person, so our giant was like voicing and acting. So yeah, that was how we did
that's
it.
Fun. I do. So then giant falls. And as written, dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. And Jack's mother comes out, usually, I find, to applause, because she's not dead. She's dead. Mm-hmm. But the actress is alive, and ha, happy ending.
And I think audience are thinking, it's the curtain call.
Right, hey. Yeah. I don't like that. 2002, the Broadway revival, they change the underscoring, and the giant falls, and it goes to this... Bum, bum, bum. The slotted spoon can catch the potato. Dun, 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 dun. And it's so much better. I love it so much more than the original Broadway. Because it's like... You're still unsure. Is Jack's mother alive now, or like, are we in the limbo at the end of a musical now? Did our quartet survive their scuffle with the giant? We don't know. The music seems pretty ominous, and then to see everyone come back with their moral and kind of get this reassurance is a much better feel to me than the bright, happy march of dun 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 dun, dun right off the bat. At a really important moment of the show, because like this is where we start entering that, you know, patented hashtag limbo land that we end so many musicals in, where people can be alive and dead and we can just sing some reprises all at once. And so it's an important transition, and do it right.
Wow, there you go, that's a message. That's true. Nothing's quite so clear now. Two things, fight things. Feel you've lost your way. You decide, but you are not alone. Believe me, no one is alone. No one is alone, believe me. Truly, you move just a finger. Say the slightest word. Something's bound to linger. Be heard. No one acts alone. Careful, no one is alone. People make mistakes. Fathers, people make mistakes. Holding to their own, thinking they're alone. Honor their mistakes. Fight for their mistakes. Everybody makes one another's terrible mistakes. Witches can be right. Giants can be good. You decide what's right. You decide what's good. Just remember, someone is on your side.
Our side. Someone else is not. While we're seeing our side, maybe we forgot. They are not.
Hey, speaking of messages, we've not really talked about the themes of this show.
Have we, though?
I know. But this is it's a nice way to kind of, this would be the last segment.
It's a good capstone.
Good way to round it off. Because the thing is where do they start? Where do they end? Pick one theme. Just try it, buddy.
Do like, they exist? Yeah. I mean,
do they?
People, I think it's in either his postscript or his preface in Look, I Made a Hat. But Sondheim talks about like, is the giant AIDS, or does the giant mean something, or is something a symbol for something?
Yes, he talks about it. And,
Or is it, you know, or does this mean something else? And he basically says, like, no, but only because that's not what we meant. Like, the giant is what you mean it to be. Which is how every playwright should be. Like, this, we've just written a show, and then you make it about what you want it to be about.
Exactly, exactly. So many people say it's AIDS.
Yeah.
And I don't think that. What I think is, it's just the big bad of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It's whatever, and it's that, it goes back to that epigenetic thing again of there's always something. There's always a giant.
Exactly. There are always wolves. There are always spells. There are always something, or a giant dwells there.
It's a shame that's a two-syllable word. but yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? There's always that. And I think that's why people are like, ah, it's this. Ah, this is what you meant. No.
Right.
No, not at all. But the thing is, so that's what, you know, he wrote The Giant. Mm-hmm. Where did he start meaning things?
Right.
Where did he start to use symbolism?
Yeah.
Does he ever?
Yeah.
Is he just writing a show?
Yeah.
And that's where I start to get a little bit like, whoa, because I feel like we could have spent a whole podcast just talking about the themes.
Right. Exactly. But there's not, you know, this is the cool, this hits me in high school world a lot. You're analyzing a play and people be like, well, did the playwright mean that? You know, did they actually intend for these lines in the glass menagerie to be deep metaphors about something, 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 something?
Yep.
And my retort to that is, like, it doesn't matter whether they meant it. It's more fun to talk about it as if they did.
Yeah.
Into the Woods is interesting because people have implied so many themes about it, and Sondheim has said his yes-no answer. His, like, it isn't, but it is, and it's what you want sort of thing. So, like, you have definitive primary source about this to say, like, make this your show.
Exactly.
Which is cool.
Exactly. And I think in a weird kind of meta-theatrical way, that ambiguity plays into the actual show itself, because that is what I would say one of the biggest, not themes, but one of the biggest threads of the show is ambiguity.
Yeah.
People are everyone is sitting on the fence.
Yeah.
Maybe apart from the witch, you could say.
Maybe.
But even then.
But even then, she has her moments. But even, like, on its simplest terms, I say the slotted spoon can't hold much soup. The slotted spoon can catch
the potato. Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
Is she talking about Jack? And him being an idiot, but then finding his potato later on? Is she talking about her inability to have food in her impoverished life? Maybe.
Yeah.
She's dead, too. Why does she care about slotted spoons and potatoes? Like,
exactly.
It's just a throwaway line. It's a funny line because potato is a funny-sounding word. And that's...
Yeah, and and I know things now, you know? Mm-hmm. You've got excited and scared. You've got, isn't it nice to know a lot? And also, it's not. And you get to the end of that song, you're like, ha, oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you mean there? Do you know, and at the end of every song, you're hit with another question. You're hit with a,
Yeah.
Okay, so you're feeling good? Like, on the steps of the palace, it's that, I'm not going to decide, he can decide.
Yeah. And then see
and we'll
what
work
he'll
it
do.
That way, and we'll see what happens. Yeah, yeah. Big, tall, terrible, scary, awesome, wonderful. You know, there's a plethora of words that all
are in opposition to each other.
Yeah, it's everywhere in this show. Yeah. Everyone is on the fence.
Yeah, and in that interesting gray area, and finding a change that they can't quite define, but they can say all these words around.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to extend that out and look at Sondheim here.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think this is something that Sondheim does all the time, a lot of the time, since he got really good. Like, it's really, really interesting because he... And I think this is what makes Sondheim shows so good.
Yeah.
Is it's because... You're constantly thinking and you're constantly going back to be like, I'm going to crack it this time.
Yeah.
Damn, it's another question.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If you think of something like Sunday in the Park with George, where it's about art and what it means to be an artist, is it good? Is it bad? Who are you hurting? Mm-hmm. Are you hurting people, but you're doing it for your art? If you look at something like Company, it's marriage, is it a good thing? Am I feeling happy about marriage? Am
right.
I, settled.
What is marriage? How do we define? Yeah. And I think it's important to draw the comparison. Please don't qualify my following statements as hate. You look at something like Hamilton, where Lin-Manuel Miranda goes in it with some pretty definite messages that he's trying to communicate. And you can figure them out. You know, simple ones, immigrants, they get the job done. Simple ones about, like, you know, the founding of our country and comparing it to how things exist now through the use of contemporary rap motif and references and allusions. And Hamilton is great and multi-layered and not mysterious. You can fully unpack it.
Yeah.
Sondheim shows are pretty unique in that you, like, can't. You can't fully unpack them.
You know, if I ever describe a Sondheim show, I'm often like, it's like a musing on this topic. It's like a discussion on, it is always a two-way street. Yeah. Whereas something like Hamilton, it'd be like, oh yeah, it's about legacy.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's, you hit it with that one thing.
Yeah.
I find it really, really difficult with any Sondheim show to just be like, it's about this.
Yeah. There's no, you know, I do... We talk about that moral line, you know, whatever they offer you, don't feed the plants. To love another person is to see the face of God.
Yeah. Into
the Woods is maybe careful the things you say, children will listen.
But also it's like, but speak to your children because it's important to teach them.
It's also, and like where Little Shop of Horrors is about man-eating plants, and the moral is whatever they offer you, don't feed the plants, and it's a metaphor about greed. Like, in Into the Woods, careful the things you say, children will listen. There aren't a lot of children in this show.
No.
There's maybe one or three or four, or where are we drawing the line? Who's a child? The baker's a child to his father, but I wouldn't call him a child. Rapunzel has kids by the end of the show. But is the witch's? But the witch has a mother, you know. Like, who? Which children are listening? Who's saying the things? Careful, the things you say. Who's the you audience, or is the witch singing about herself? Like, careful, the things I've said. And immediately, it's a package with no bottom that we try
definitely. And I think, but I think that's it. Is even just like, careful the things you say, children listen. It's not. Say this to your child.
Right.
It's not a definite thing. It's be mindful.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's it. It's just like, think about it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? With, you know, something like, again, with Sunday, it's like, think about the things you do for your art, the things you do for the things you love.
I will say the success of Sondheim is that... And this, I threw shade to one side of the aisle, we're throwing shade the other way. Something like Great Comet, which also does evoke those kind of higher order, like, what is life? What is my comet? You know, like, the moral of Great Comet. My mother would not leave Great Comet going like, oh, wow, what a fun show. I had such a great time. What exciting characters who had interesting, you know, mischief that they did and came out of it the other end with, like, resolute finishes. Like, she might enjoy Great Comet, but wouldn't have as distinct, you know, suburban mom thoughts about it. You can leave Into the Woods and be like, man, what a great night at the theater. Everyone got their happy ending. Like, you can stop in your understanding and be very satisfied with the show.
Yeah.
You can pick it up on a surface level and get tinges of the lying underneath sort of stuff, but still leave it being like, you can do that with Company. You can do that with Sweeney Todd. You can do that with all of these shows, all of, you know, later Sondheim, successful, popular Sondheim, and leave it with a very base level, like, yes, successful, positive night at the theater where I witnessed a narrative story that I followed and didn't seem weird, and no Cirque du Soleil performer sat in my lap. Like, the fact that it reaches all, it pushes all these buttons at the same time, that song.
Yeah, for sure.
It's great.
Telling when we're getting dimmer. I think I see a glimmer.
Into the woods you have to go, and that's the way you learn to cope. Into the woods to find there's hope of getting through the journey. Into the woods each time you go, there's more to learn of what you know. Into the woods but not too slow. Into the woods it's nearing midnight. Into the woods to mind the wolf, to heed the witch, to honor the giant, to mind, to heed, to find, to think, to teach, to try, to go to the festival. Into the woods.
Jimmy, that was Into the Woods.
It was.
Happy 50th, goodness. Man.
Happy 50th to you too, T.
Did you think...
I also have a feeling we could do Into the Woods again for the 51st.
Probably. And like the 100th, you know.
Yeah, exactly. We'll just keep coming back.
There'll be a new Disney holodeck movie of it by then, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm so excited for it, yeah.
Did you think we'd ever make it to 50?
50. Yes.
You're a very optimistic man.
Thank you. No, I really didn't. I didn't. But then it's strange because when we started,
yeah,
did I ever think we'd do more than one?
No, I think the last 35 have felt so much easier than like the first 10. I don't know if that math works out, but you know.
I totally understand what you mean. And it's just so strange. I think, and this will sound cheesy and tacked on, but it's not. I think a lot of it is to do with the listeners.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Because the interaction that we get is like, the thing that, it sounds so cheesy and tacked on, but I promise you it's not. I was bred to be charming, not sincere. But no, it's that's the kind of thing that keeps you going because it's like, it's the people that you're talking to.
Yeah.
If it was just us having a conversation, it wouldn't be as exciting.
We'd get bored of each other. Yeah. Well, and it's that exciting thing of like, I don't know if this happens in other places because I only live in musical theater, but finding out that other people get your stuff.
Right.
Is fun.
Yeah. And learning. It's a proper conversation. I love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. And you don't need to like say it out loud, but do you think it's like a better platform than YouTube
for this? Absolutely.
Yeah, I would agree, because you get to have a conversation. I feel like it's hard to have a conversation.
It's
YouTube.
Hard to, you don't YouTube's not a conversation, it's a performance.
Yeah. Whereas especially this... when you're up at, you know, 50 gazillion thousand subscribers like you.
Yeah. You made up like six numbers in that sentence.
Speaking
of 50 gazillion,
yes.
Let's talk about 51. I got a quiz question
number
for you.
Number 51, we're still going. We're not stopping.
Here we go. You ready?
I'm ready.
One of the collaborators on next week's musical has worked with a laundry list of famous musical theater names. I'm talking Lin-Manuel Miranda, Jeremy Jordan, Ramin Karimloo, Betsy Wolfe, Annalie Ashford, and Sierra Bogus, but...
Sierra Bogus?
Not in the way you think, Jimmy. What show could this be?
It never is. It never is in the way we think. It's always twisted. If you want to get in touch with us, come say happy birthday. You can come and find me on Twitter at AsinHendrix or YouTube at the same handle.
And I'm Musical Mash on Twitter and Musical Theater Mash on YouTube, or our show Twitter, Jim and Tomic, and our show website, jimandtomic.com, which has a link to the Reddit discussion, where y'all are just great.
Exactly. And tell all your friends all about us. We really, 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 really want a zig-a-zig. We want to make this podcast grow and grow and
last
grow.
Last longer than the Spice Girls.
Yeah, wow, that's a challenge.
Yeah,
okay, let's do that. And that involves you telling your friends all about it.
And thank you for listening to us.
Yeah, thank you very much, everyone. You're very nice. I really like you. Oh, I'm getting all blushy.
We'll be in your ears next week.
Yep, see you then.
Bye.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, here's that teaser we talked about. It's for a new segment we're doing called Unsung Heroes. Not going to happen all the time, but the first one is available right now, and some of it sounds a little bit like this. Faster than a speeding Sondheim, this is Unsung Heroes! Where does the corn and the poop come in?
So basically, classic time. This is kind of like the start of the subplot, the main subplot, which kind of sees the tension between Clara and Jeff. Basically, what Jeff is doing is he's changing a nappy, because what they've found is since moving to Pittsburgh, Clara at the school actually takes a little bit longer to come home. Mm-hmm. So Jeff comes home a lot earlier from work than expected and has to help take care of Deacon.
Yeah, the household duties. How progressive. They seem like very progressive.
I wish.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.